Okay, I guess I'm gonna also talk what goes around comes around, and we started the workshop with Alan's talk on Lie ideals and digraph algebra. So we'll end it also with Lie ideals, Lie structures, and operator algebras. And the title was Lie structures and nest algebras, and of course B of H is a nest algebra. It's a trivial nest. And so I'm actually going to try and give you perhaps an overview of why I'm interested in these things. I'll be talking about work that I've done with a number of people, including Jared Murphy, Ahmed Soror, and Tim Hudson, and I'll try and point out at which point what I did with whom. So, just to recall, if A is an algebra, and L is a linear manifold, then L is a Lie ideal, provided that M and L, A and A, implies that the commutator is back in L, and, well, I'm a big believer in examples, so of course, start small. If A is abelian, then everything's a Lie ideal. Every manifold. And more generally, when A is not abelian, at least everything, every subspace contained in the center of A. is a Lie ideal. And for the n by n matrices over the complex numbers, there are four Lie ideals, namely 0, the scalars, the trace 0, which I'll denote by SLN, and MN, so this is trace 0. It's not hard to check that each of these individually is a Lie ideal, and that these are the only ones is also not impossible to check. Another example, if A is arbitrary, then the span of the commutators is trivially a Lie ideal. And more generally, again, if K is an ideal, an associative ideal of A, then the span of things of the form AK, A and A, K and K is a Lie ideal, simply because commutator B with something in this span just gives me something that's already in the span, because K being an ideal means AK is in the ideal and K is in the ideal. Okay, so, well, I've already, in the case where A is equal to MN, we're just getting back to trace zero operators. If A is abelian, we're just always going to get zero. And, let's see, if A is, let's say, the compacts, we'll get back to compacts from here. If A is B of H, then the theorem of Brown and Piercy says that, again, we'll get back B of H from here. This is an interesting result because of the theorem. Due to Herstein in the mid-50s, that says that if you have a C-star algebra, and if you have a Lie ideal sitting inside A, then either L sits inside the center of A, or there exists a non-zero associative ideal K so that the span of the commutators AK sits inside L. And as a corollary, if A is a simple unital C star algebra and L is a Lie ideal, that means that either L is zero or the scalars, or L has to contain all the commutators. As an application of this, if you take a look at something like, for example, if we have A to be the 2-infinity UHF algebra, that's simple, that's unital. And so if we look at the set of all, and it has a unique trace. So if we look at the set of all, I'll call it SL of A, to be the set of all things in A, such that the trace of A is equal to zero, as in the finite dimensional case, you could show that this is a Lie ideal. In fact, a result of Peterson says that this is just the closure, the norm closure of A closure, of A comma A closure. On the other hand, a result of FAC in 82, Thierry FAC, showed that this is already closed. And for those of us who do care about counting, you can show that everything in here is a sum of 14 commutators, although I now believe I could do it with 3. And so, being a simple unital C star algebra, that means that if we take a look at, well, let me just mention the result that I first got with Murphy. It said that the only Lie ideals here, and this uses obviously this result, are going to be zero, the trace zero, and everything. The result with Murphy included this case as a special example. In B of H, we have a characterization of all the Lie ideals. It's due, well, in the case of closed Lie ideals, it's due to Totting. In the case of general linear manifolds, it's due to Fong, Myers, and Soror. So, it says that if we have a Lie ideal L, we've already heard this before, then there exists an associative ideal J so that the commutators of B of H with J will be contained in L, and that'll be contained in J plus the scalars, and as a consequence, the closed Lie ideals of B of H are 0, CI, compacts, the unitization of the compacts, and B of H itself, and therefore the only weakly closed, as it will come up in a moment, the only weakly closed Lie ideals in B of H will be zero, the scalars, and everything. Another nice result due to Herstein is that if we take the span, well, first of all, so A in algebra, and I'll take the set of all idempotents in A. This, then the span of the idempotents is going to be a Lie ideal. The proof is long and complicated, but allow me to outline it for you. So suppose that E is in here and A is in the algebra. I'll let F1 be equal to E plus EA minus EAE. F2 be E plus AE minus EAE. Then the commutator of A with E is just equal to F2 minus F1. That's certainly in the span of the idempotents. So now you actually just do the calculation to show that these are each idempotents to begin with. So, okay, I lied. The proof wasn't that complicated. Clever, though. This is as close as I can get to efficiently using the boards. Okay, so here's one example of a nice Lie ideal. And in fact, if you go to C star algebras again, then I claim that if you let L be the span of the projections, then once again, this is a Lie ideal, and the reason is that, well, the span of the projections actually agrees with the span of the idempotents, and that comes from the fact that every idempotent could be written as a linear combination of projections. That was, Murphy and I first had it when the case where the algebra was simple, but in fact, Ken Davidson showed us an argument that works in general, and actually gives you an estimate. It tells you that every idempotent could be written as a linear combination of five or fewer projections. And so that tells you that the span of the projections is a Lie ideal. Well, again, as an application, and this is the kind of application that I've been interested in, if you come back over to this example, you know what all the Lie ideals are, and you know that the span of the projections is a Lie ideal. It's not zero. It's not C1. There exist projections with non-zero trace. Therefore, it has to be the entire algebra. When I say span here, I'm not talking about closed spans. I'm talking about just spans, algebraic spans. This kind of argument works in a whole slew of C star algebras, including Bunsden's algebras and Kunth's algebras, a whole bunch of them. You don't even need a unique trace, although that finitely many traces helps. And again, because I'm the kind of guy who cares, if you're interested, you can do it with 121 projections in this algebra. For those of you who heard me say 561 at GPOTS, that's the exchange rate. Okay, so much for the self-adjoint, but as I said, in essence, this kind of problem is what's motivated me to look at these Lie ideals. And now we'll move on to nest algebras, and let's first look at the finite dimensional case. So first we'll look at the case of a maximal nest, namely we'll just look at the upper triangular matrices. That's certainly going to be a nest algebra. And as was pointed out by Alan Hoppenbosser on Monday morning, given a Lie ideal, if we take a look at the set of, given a Lie ideal, if we take a look at the off-diagonal entries corresponding to elements in the Lie ideal, they could be separated individually, off-diagonal. And that means that once we have a non-zero element off the diagonal, we could change it arbitrarily. Well, that's, of course, we could do with scaling, but we could change it arbitrarily relative to the other off-diagonal elements is the more important thing. And in fact, you could show that this is going to form, the off-diagonal pieces are going to form a regular associative ideal. And now the question becomes, how do you fill in the diagonal to get back an estimate of what your the ideal is? So let me just see, actually, just to keep track of what I have here. Okay. So the off-diagonal part turns out to be an associative ideal. So here we go. And the question becomes, well, it's clearly any associative ideal in an algebra is trivially a Lie ideal. So now the question becomes, so this is automatically the smallest Lie ideal that contains K, and the question becomes, what's the largest Lie ideal that contains K? So we have to try to figure out what the conditions on the diagonal entries are. And as he pointed out, so I might call this L min of K. As he pointed out, the condition, in essence, is to look at the entries over here. And if this one is a zero, then these two diagonal entries have to coincide. If they didn't, if there was something in K, if there was something in L where these two diagonal entries didn't coincide, then by taking the commutator with the ij unit, I'd get something that lives over here, and that would contradict the fact that my off-diagonal part doesn't live there. So that in this case, I get lambda 1. Here, since this is non-zero, I can change that to any lambda 2. Since this is zero, I require lambda 2. Since this is non-zero, I can change that to lambda 3. And since this entry is zero, I need lambda 3 again. So this is the maximal diagonal I could take corresponding to this ideal structure. And again, so my diagonal corresponding to this is just the set of all lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 2, lambda 3, lambda 3. And if S is any subspace, any linear manifold that sits between 0 and this diagonal, then L sub S equal to S plus K turns out to be a Lie ideal as well. This is really the happiest case in the following sense, that if we don't look, so this in a sense is the maximal case where you have exactly, well, the intersection of Tn with its adjoint is just a massive, but if you take, for example, if we take T2 tensor M2, so I think about matrices which are 2x2 upper triangular whose entries are 2x2 matrices, I can consider this ideal being an ideal that's automatically going to be a Lie ideal, and then it's also going to automatically be the smallest Lie ideal that contains this as its off-diagonal part, because here the diagonal is actually the stuff that lives on these corners. Now, the compression of a Lie ideal to a diagonal piece like this is either that's a homomorphism, or the compression of the algebra to a diagonal piece like this is a homomorphism, which is going to preserve Lie brackets, the A comma B, and therefore it'll preserve Lie ideals. So whatever I'm going to put on the diagonal in order to get a Lie ideal, the diagonal pieces themselves have to be Lie ideals. And since this is one of these MNs, I know exactly what Lie ideals I can put here. Zero is going to be the smallest. Clearly, I can put everything on the diagonal. That's the biggest, but it's no longer true that I can fill in any subspace between 0 and this maximal diagonal. Here, the maximal diagonal is just M2, direct sum M2, it's no longer true that I can fill in my diagonal arbitrarily, and that you can see just by taking X in M2 and considering things of the form X, Y, X, where X and Y are in M2, the compression to any diagonal piece is going to be just M2, and so that's going to be Lie ideal. On the other hand, I can separate using a commutator. Say I choose Z in M2, so that Z doesn't commute with X. And then if I take a look at X, Y, 0, X, and ask that, tape the Lie bracket of that with Z, 0, 0, 0, which is in my algebra after the, I get something that looks like X, Z in this corner. I don't care about that. 0 and 0 down here, which is no longer back in my Lie ideal. So you have to make your choice of diagonal subspaces carefully. I'll leave it at that. I suspect that a good deal of you, if not everyone, knows more about nest algebras than I do, so let me just ask, is there anyone for whom I should remind them of the definition of a nest algebra? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay, so we all know what nest algebras are. So N will be a nest, and Tn will be the corresponding nest algebra, and so given N in N, N plus will be the immediate successor, which may or may not be N. N minus is the immediate predecessor. And an interval will be something of the form M minus N. Of course, I'm going to use N for both being the subspaces and the projections onto the subspaces. This will be an interval. And the minimal non-zero intervals are called atoms. So things of the form N plus minus N is an atom if it's not equal to zero. And of course, N is atomic if the span of the atoms is dense in H, and it's continuous if there are no atoms. And what else will I need? I will need what I will call the atomic diagonal. So given N, the atomic diagonal corresponding to N will simply be, well, the span of P, P of H, P, where P is an atom. And there always exists a canonical expectation, delta from the algebra to this atomic diagonal. Just given by delta P is equal to the sum P, 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 where P is that. Okay. So the question that Tim Hudson and Ahmed and I, and then Ahmed and I looked at was to classify the weakly closed Lie ideals in T of N, and then this was pointed out the other day by Verne. If you have a Banach algebra and you have a norm closed B ideal, then that will be invariant under conjugation by anything in the connected component of the identity, and vice versa. And in fact, on Wednesday, I don't know if I'll have the time to actually provide that proof of Verne's for you here, but he also showed me an argument that shows that if you have a weakly closed B ideal in an atomic nest algebra, then in fact, that's the same thing as being invariant under conjugation by invertible elements in the nest algebra. This still will not give you an actual description of the Lie ideals, which is what we'll provide here. And at the moment, I don't see how to extend that argument beyond the atomic case, which we will do here. And when the invertibles are connected, in the infinite multiplicity case, we're able to prove that theorem regardless of whether or not the Lie ideal is closed. So we're not out of business yet. We're not even going to sell the theorems cheap at this point. Well, as I mentioned before, whenever you have an associative ideal in an algebra, it's automatically a Lie ideal. So since we're going to characterize the weakly closed Lie ideals, we'll need to know what the weakly closed associative ideals look like. And fortunately, we do. A result from about 20 years ago due to Erdos and Power tells us exactly that if K, well, tells us more than this, but in particular, if you apply it to the weakly closed ideals, it tells us that the weakly closed ideals can be described by the following. Namely, there exists a left order continuous order homomorphism that I'll call tilde from the nest into itself, so that n tilde is always less than or equal to n, and k is described by the set of all t, so that 1 minus n tilde t n is equal to 0. So in essence, it says that this part over here has to be 0. Of course, just to be in the nest algebra, we already know that this has to be 0, this has to be 0, and this has to be 0. So the crux of the matter is that you're actually saying that the ideal is described by the set of all t's so that t is 0 on that diagonal piece. Okay. And this has to be, you have to do this for every n, obviously, not just for a single n. That's a very useful result. In fact, as I mentioned, if you're looking at the upper triangular matrices, that's right, and then you take a look at a Lie ideal there, then the strictly upper triangular part forms an associative ideal. You can actually separate off each of the coordinates. We don't have coordinates in general because we don't necessarily have an atomic nest, let alone something that looks like, let's say, the natural numbers. So we have to try to get a corresponding result, and you could do so simply by, well, it's not exactly the same, but we've characterized those elements of the ideal by saying which part is zero. You can also say that corresponding to that n, everything up in this corner is permissible. And if you take the spans of these corners, you'll get back, the weakly closed span of these corners, you'll get back to the ideal. Well, using that sort of an idea, you can show the following. Namely, if we start off with a weakly closed Lie ideal in our nest algebra, and if we let K sub L be the weakly closed span of things of the form P, T, 1 minus P, so that P is in my nest, then in fact, so again, let me draw the picture. Let me put P minus over here for a moment. I'm drawing it as though P minus to P is an atom. It's not necessarily an atom, but I want to say something in the case where it is. In essence, what we're taking is this part. T is in L, sorry. So I'll take something that's in my Lie ideal, and I'll take this part of it. Well, this is PT minus PTP, but T is in my nest algebra, so PTP is the same as TP, so this is a commutator of something that lives in the Lie ideal. So this is back in the Lie ideal. What's less obvious, perhaps, is the fact that everything that lives over here is back in my Lie ideal originally. Again, we can't just separate out points, coordinates, so you actually have to show that you get back everything. And notice that in the case where P minus and P are different, as I've drawn it here, we lose everything that's on the atom. Well, the proposition says that this is a weakly closed, well, that's not too surprising, associative ideal, and it's atomic diagonal disjoint, which means that when you take that, where is it? When you take the expectation onto the atomic diagonal, you get zero. So it kills everything on the atomic diagonal. And this plays the role of the off-diagonal part of your Lie ideal. Of course, if your Lie ideal is T of n and n is the Volterra nest, this gives you back the entire Volterra nest algebra. Okay. And now the question is, once you've got that this is the off-diagonal part of your ideal, the question becomes, what can you put back on the atomic diagonal? So here we'll just start off now. We can assume that we have one of these associative ideals that's atomic diagonal disjoint. And corresponding to the matrix case where we said that this, the existence of this part in the off-diagonal part of the Lie ideal allows us to put different scalars here and here, we want to have a notion of atoms that are adjacent to our off-diagonal ideal. We said that we could put a scalar here, lambda 2, a different scalar here, but then we had to put lambda 2 here again because this was 0. So what we're going to say in the finite dimensional case, we'll say that this atom is adjacent to the Lie ideal, because everything above it and everything to the right of it is in the Lie ideal. The second atom here will not be adjacent, because although everything above it is in the Lie ideal, it's not true that everything to the right of it is in the Lie ideal. And similarly, the third atom will not be adjacent, because not everything above it is in the Lie ideal. The way you describe that is as follows. So, here I should emphasize that I'm talking about an associative ideal, weakly closed at this point. So the atoms adjacent to K are given as follows. It's the set of all E take away E minus so that E tilde is equal to E minus and F tilde is bigger than or equal to E whenever F is bigger than E, and it's exactly saying that this atom will be adjacent. This atom will be adjacent because everything above and to the right. And this atom will be adjacent. This atom will not be, and this atom will not be. Okay. So it's exactly this concept, only that's the general way of phrasing it. And the idea is that while you cannot just add any subspace of the maximal diagonal, so to speak, nevertheless, you can specify which spaces you can add as follows. What we'll do is we'll consider what's called the saturation of our diagonal disjoint, atomic diagonal disjoint ideal, by a subset of these adjacent atoms as follows. So we'll consider A1 to be a subset of A sub k, and the saturation of my ideal by A1 will just be the set of all things of the form k plus the summation p in A1 of p, b of h, p. So I'm just adding, I take a subset of these adjacent atoms, and at that atom, I add anything I want. I'll also consider the so-called trace zero part. And this will just be exactly the same thing. Only now I'll consider the trace zero part of B of H. Well, in finite dimensions, those are exactly the trace zero matrices. Because again, the issue is that compressing to that atom is going to give me Lie ideal. So I can consider the Lie ideal of all trace zero matrices, and when H is infinite dimensional, this is everything. The span of the commutators is everything. And this one is an ideal. And this one is a weakly closed Lie ideal. So these should be spans. So this essentially recovers the pieces, the parts of the atoms where the Lie ideal is big. Okay, so I know that it's going to be, if I take the compression of the Lie ideal to an atom, I don't have very many choices. This is weakly closed. It's either going to be zero, the scalars, or B of H. Or in finite dimensions, if the atom is finite dimensional, zero, the scalars, the trace zero, or MN. Here I've identified the parts where it's not going to be zero or the scalars. To identify the part where I have to have the same scalars, we'll use the following. First, I have to define what we'll call the Lie residual quotient. In essence, it's a set of all things in the nest algebra, so that when you take the bracket, they get absorbed into Lie ideal. So if L is a Lie ideal, then I'll consider the so-called Lie residual quotient. It'll be the set of all things in the nest algebra, so that no matter what you take the bracket with, you end up back in the Lie ideal. Well, certainly anything in the Lie ideal is there. And if M is any subspace between L and its residual quotient, then you can show that M is also Lie ideal. That's not a very hard calculation. This, of course, has the advantage that the 4x4 matrix example, where I couldn't fill in everything on the diagonal as XX. When we were looking before at the 4x4 matrices, that is the upper triangular matrices with 2x2 blocks, again, we had 0 as the minimal, the ideal containing this corner. We had everything as the maximal one, but we couldn't just fill in everything in between because we couldn't put X and the same X over there. This helps us get around that. And now what you want to do is you want to have some hope of identifying what this looks like. And in order to do that, we'll consider the following. We'll define for K, our ideal. We'll define C sub K to be the set of all things in the core of the algebra, which is the commutant of the diagonal, or if you want, it's the algebra generated by the projections. And this will be the set of all things such that there exists a scalar so that E, take away E tilde, D, E, take away E tilde, is equal to lambda E, E, take away E tilde. If my ideal looks like everything supported above this, then in essence what this is going to force is everything here to look like one scalar. Everything here will look like a different scalar, and everything here will look potentially like a third scalar, and I can make the jump the minute I come close enough to the diagonal. So these will be the diagonal guys that look like a unique scalar over here, a unique scalar over there, and a unique scalar over here. And the proposition that we get from this definition is that, again, let me say J so that here I don't need this to be, I should perhaps have said J. I don't need this to be necessarily a diagonal, atomic diagonal disjoint ideal. So even in the case where this is just an associative ideal, weakly closed, we get that if I take the residual quotient, so everything that gets absorbed back into J starting from J0, that's the same thing as everything whose bracket gets absorbed into J starting with J. And this is exactly J plus the C sub J. So in essence, going back to the matrix example, what we've done is we've identified exactly the part where this has to be the same scalar now. And the theorem that you get is the following. Says that if you have a weakly closed, the ideal, once you have the structure of the ideal showing that its conjugation invariant is not as bad, the following are equivalent. First of all, L is conjugation invariant. Secondly, they should be linear manifold. Otherwise, proving that it's equivalent to being a Lie ideal is not that hard. L is a Lie ideal. Thirdly, there exists an atomic diagonal disjoint associative ideal Okay. And a subset A1 of the atoms adjacent to K so that the saturation of K by these atoms, and then you take the zero trace part, is contained in L, and that's contained in the saturation plus C sub K. And finally, there exists an associative ideal J so that J0 is contained in L, is contained in J plus C sub J. So I see that I'm running out of time. I just want to mention a couple of results that are more related to the applications. For instance, according to this, if you take a look at the nilpotents of order 2 in a nest algebra, that's going to be conjugation invariant. Take the weakly closed span. You can actually show it's the entire nest algebra. Well, the zero trace part of the nest algebra. If you take a look at the finite dimensional atoms, you have to have zero trace. If you take a look at the idempotents in the nest algebra, you take the weakly closed span. Those are also conjugation invariant. Anything similar to an idempotent, well, conjugation, anything similar to an idempotent with the similarity coming from the nest algebra is going to be an idempotent. The weakly closed span is going to be a Lie ideal. It's going to contain virtually everything on the, well, it will contain everything on the diagonal. It'll have to be the entire nest algebra. So the weakly closed span of the idempotents is the whole nest algebra. I don't have time. If you take a look at a nest algebra that has infinite multiplicity, no finite dimensional atoms, everything is a linear combination of 8 idempotents. Everything is a sum of 2 commutators. And you can use the fact that everything is a linear combination of 8 idempotents to show that A and B are equivalent without this condition. And the technique that you use essentially is the technique from von Meyers and Sorores to write down, well, you also need to know, and here's where you steal some results from Davidson Orr and Davidson Orr Pitts, when they were showing the connectedness of the invertibles in these nest algebras with infinite multiplicity, they actually wrote down their invertibles as products of special invertibles. But if you just follow that through even more, you can show that you can write every invertible in the nest algebra of infinite multiplicity as a product of 28 involutions. Once you have that, every invertible is a product of involutions, you can use the results of von Meyer and Sorores, as I said, to get that A and B are equivalent. And you also need the fact that everything is a finite combination of 8 idempotents, or at least a finite number, to get that A and B are equivalent. I'll stop there. I can say that that's going to be a Lie ideal, but it's not going the norm closed span. I still don't. It's not clear to me. I mean, if you take just the span, that cannot be everything. And the reason is, if you take a look at a nest that looks like the natural numbers. Okay, and now I'm not taking closures. But if you take a nest that looks like the natural numbers, and you take an idempotent, and now take the expectation of that onto the diagonal. That's an idempotent. But the diagonal there just looks like L infinity. So it's an idempotent in little L infinity. So it looks like one, it's a self-adjoint projection. The diagonal is also an abelian C-star algebra. You take finite linear combinations of projections, you're only going to get, since everything is commuting, you're only going to get finite spectrum. So if you just take spans of idempotents, you're not going to get everything because you can't get the diagonal sequence 1 over n. But you could do that with closures.